Welcome back to Posting Through It. My name is Jared Holt. I'm your host. This is a bi-weekly podcast. It comes out every other Monday. It examines our cultural and political decay at the root, which these days is increasingly the internet. Each week, I bring on a guest who is doing work I admire or has perspectives that I value, and we talk for about half an hour. You can find the episode archive on postingthroughit.com. There's also a newsletter there that goes out in between each episode. If you're feeling generous, you can subscribe to give $5 per month to keep this project going. It's what makes this all possible, and I appreciate it so deeply. There's been a lot happening in the right-wing ecosystem lately online that I feel is relevant to discuss on this podcast. There's like a million things in the news cycle right now that I could discuss on this podcast and stay perfectly in theme. So this episode, while it certainly is not going to hit all of them, I hope it hits some of them. We're going to go through a few different news stories, a few different topics, and try to provide, you know, in a nice 30-minute package, sort of a roundup of some of the bigger stories happening in right-wing media. Some are funny, some are a little bit scary, but I couldn't think of a better guest to come on and help me do that than Will Sommer. He is a reporter at The Daily Beast. He is the co-host of the podcast Fever Dreams, which I was recently on, if you want to check out that episode. He's a go-to source for information about the QAnon movement. He has a book coming out early next year about it. And with all that said, I will stop my jabbering. We'll go to a quick musical interlude, and I'll be back with Will Sommer. Joining the podcast this week, we have a familiar voice, a friend of the show, old friend of the show, even, Will Sommer.
Way back.
Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So there's a lot to go over. Typically, I have guests on the show and we really hone in on one topic, but there's just been so many things like churning through the pipes that I thought you would be a great person to come on and just break them down. And I think first we have to talk about the biggest story of the century, I think, which is Kanye West moving to maybe, I guess, intend to buy Parler, the alternative social media site financed by Rebecca Mercer, infamous for being a place where, you know, the people that stormed the Capitol were posting selfies saying, look at me, here I am, breaking the law. Will, what do we know about this acquisition? I mean, I guess like the Elon Musk and Twitter thing, I kind of will believe it when I see it, but curious what you know. Can you fill us in?
Yeah, I mean, this is such a weird one. I mean, I think when we started covering these right-wing guys, I did not expect Kanye to sort of play such a large role.
I know. College-age me is heartbroken.
Oh, I know. We all love my beautiful, dark, twisted fantasy, and now look at this. So this was really randomly announced, but, you know, I think you were right on the money to be one of the first people to point out that Candace Owens, who is sort of one of Kanye's advisors in terms of the right-wing media world, that her husband runs Parler and presumably has some equity stake in it that's going to be paid out with this purchase.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised how many people missed that out of the gate, where they're like, well, wouldn't you know, it's another rich guy buying a tech platform, just like Elon Musk, just like, and I'm like, no. Candace Owens, you know, the like right-wing commentator formerly called Red Pill Black, used to go on InfoWars a lot. Remember her? Yeah, her husband owns this thing. And like, I still wish I knew more about the deal. Like, how much equity is Kanye getting? What was this company valued at? Because some of the reporting I saw was that they were sort of shopping around trying to offload Parler and just asking an absurd amount of money for it. I never saw what that number was, but just, you know, some reporting that people had said that. This is not financial advice. This is not a financial podcast, but it kind of just strikes me as a bad investment. Will, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, Parler is like an empty husk of a website at this point. I mean, you know, you mentioned January 6th, which was sort of its career highlight of being used to plan the insurrection. And since then, I mean, it's been in the dumps. It's just like, you know, the action, such as it is on Truth Social, Telegram, Gab. Really, you know, Parler doesn't even measure up to those sites, much less something like Twitter. I mean, my theory to this is, besides like whatever Candace Owens may be telling Kanye, is that like he's really going with this kind of like mogul persona right now. And this, theoretically, I think if you're very sympathetic to him, puts him in this conversation with Elon Musk and Donald Trump of Truth Social. And I think that's the idea, is that he kind of wants to feel that he has like a stake in the action, and that this is really more of a sort of a symbol or a thing to sort of tout in interviews than any sort of actual kind of investment.
Yeah, and I also saw some reporting smartly pointing out that Parler, the social media, you know, alternative social media site, is what Kanye bought. But there's a whole other side to that business, the owning business, that is doing like cloud hosting and whatnot, which is sort of more in line with something like what Andrew Torba has tried to do with Gab, which is say, you know, we're not just a place to come post, you know, that there's a Jewish conspiracy running the world. You can also like send money to each other with Gab, or like, you know, post videos here and that sort of thing. Like, that's really interesting, because I feel like if Kanye was really a mogul, that's where he would go, because that seems to be the direction that this broader alternative tech vision seems to be going, which is, you know, not just creating a new place to post, but actually trying to engineer, you know, often pretty shitty and crappy versions of like online infrastructure so that they don't have to deal with the quote unquote, you know, woke PayPal. The famously woke company, PayPal.
Yeah, right. I mean, it gave us people like Peter Thiel and Elon Musk. Yeah. I mean, the whole idea that, I think you're right on the money, that like there's sort of a gold rush right now in terms of what they call the parallel economy, to the point that Dan Bongino has a site called Parallel Economy where he's trying to build his own payment processor. And basically, like, it's kind of a genius idea, because you don't have to think of your own company idea. You just need to like make a successful, like a copy of a successful company, and say, this is the anti-woke version. And theoretically, this will take off. Obviously, we've seen this for a while with social media, but I think we're seeing it with more different things. As you mentioned, I mean, with the idea of like, well, this will be the cloud hosting for all the other anti-woke companies. Now, I think the difficulty is like, what kind of multiple is Kanye paying? If I think you're right that like that is a more viable business model than Parler's social media apparatus, but like what, you know, I think in that case, you could probably just buy a couple servers, you know, and I suspect it's costing him more than that.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to picture Kanye West like rapping on his next album, but there's just the faint whir of like a server farm in the background. People are like, what is this?
You know, since Bitcoin crashed, I feel like a lot of this equipment is cheaper to get. The other thing I wanted to add about this is like Ali Alexander, who is sort of a henchman for hire, I guess, to famous people. He's been really like pumping up the Kanye stuff. And he said, well, you know, now that Kanye bought Parler, Elon has no choice but to pay Kanye $100 million for Parler and combine it with Twitter. And I mean, Parler just has like a very, very tiny user base. I mean, but these are the point I'm making is that like the Parler purchase is much more of kind of like a thing you can imagine in your sort of fantasies about a right-wing takeover of the world than anything real.
Yeah, and I also think the important context here that I want to make sure we don't miss is that this happened, you know, this acquisition was announced just a few days after, I think it was Twitter and Instagram locked Kanye out of his accounts for posting conspiracy theories about how, you know, Jews run the world, they run the music industry, whatever. Classic anti-Semitism, you know, textbook, you know, ripped straight out of like an ADL guide to like anti-Semitism, right? And the company, you know, Parler just seemed to not really care, just kind of went ahead. I do imagine that, you know, from some of the other reporting I saw in places like the Wall Street Journal, that, you know, apparently this idea was brought up when Candace Owens and Kanye were hanging out at Paris Fashion Week. I guess this has probably been in the works longer than, you know, this latest anti-Semitic outburst. But I'm curious what it says to you and your opinion about what's going on here, that Kanye West can make these statements like this, get, you know, distanced from things. Like, I think this morning I saw Balenciaga is like, yeah, no more Kanye. His music label doesn't even know if he's like on the label anymore, which is outstanding. You know, what's that say in context to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could imagine Kanye seeing himself get kicked off or suspended from these platforms and saying like, well, you know, I need to get my own. Now, I think if you're buying Parler, you may as well just set up like a website. At that, yeah. Like, you know, you're just like a read site.
He needs a blog, man.
RSS yeah, feed. Yeah, exactly. Get a WordPress. And you know, you can get your voice out that way. Because, I mean, I do think that that's part of it. I think we see this with a lot of, like, rich people who get some kind of consequences for their actions or their speech. And then they get very obsessed with, like, cancel culture and, like, how am I going to build, this place where I can speak whatever I want. And so I think that's what's going on here. I just think Parler is, like, a really awful way to do it.
Yeah. Terrible buy. Again, the metaphorical lawyer in the room is screaming at me to say not financial advice, but
yes. And the other thing I would add is like Parler is still being sued by its creator, John Motsi or Matsy, however.
I didn't know that. What's going on with that?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Cause he got pushed out. And I think the Mercers pushed him out. And there was like all this drama, like Dan Bongino's involved because Bongino is supposedly a shareholder, but like Motsi says he's not really and blah, blah, blah. So there's this like really protracted years long lawsuit over this. And so I've been trying to get in touch with him and his lawyers. They haven't gotten back to me, but I would love to know. I mean, if you're being sued by a guy who theoretically has some equity claim, like, you know, maybe that's going to hold up the purchase.
Important consideration. I feel like I remember reading a headline about that, but totally forgot about that. So
yeah. So I just checked it and it's still going on. So, I mean, it's one of those classic things where it's like, unfortunately it's can't access the files in the court case online, but I'm sure, you know, it's going down in Las Vegas. So, you know, who knows what has been spilled about Parler's 12 users out there.
Well, speaking of financially sound decisions, I wanted to talk about this story that you published. I think it was just yesterday at the Daily Beast, of course, about Vox Day, Theodore Beale. This is like OG white supremacist blogger type.
Yes. So
this is like generation one. And Vox Day is not a name you hear much anymore. But his fan base is like devoutly loyal. He's got some like real heads, really dedicated. I feel like the modern analog I would compare it to, even though these two people are not comparable, would be somebody like Tor Says, the like mm-hmm. QAnon influencer, where it's not as if she's pulling in like millions of views and hits on her stuff, but her fan base that does stick with her is like super loyal and willing to pony up cash. Will, can you describe what they ponied up some cash for?
Because it didn't go great. I mean, I think that's a great comparison. I mean, this guy is a guy who like was one of the kind of foremost figures back in Gamergate. And then after that, sort of when guys were happy to call themselves members of the alt-right before, like after Charlottesville, that suddenly no one was really a self-identified member of the alt-right. And he's kind of played a role in a lot of like, I didn't quite say this in my like kind of like geek controversies. So it's like video games. He was involved in like this whole kind of like a quasi coup of the big science fiction fantasy awards where basically he had all his fans. People may remember this. It was called like the Sad Puppies. This is like almost too complicated for me to even care about. But basically they were like the SJWs have taken over. It was very much a Gamergate thing for books because it was like SJWs have taken over science fiction. We got to take this back over. And ultimately in comics as well. And so he created this comic book series called Alt Hero. So we're seeing a little alt-right echo there. And this is like, yep. You know, these are going to be real, like traditional masculine American heroes. And one of these characters was named Rebel. She's a sexy young lady in a Confederate flag bustier. And this stuff, it succeeded enough that he then said, well, we'll make a movie out of it. And it'll be called Rebel's Run. And so we're going to crowdfund $1 million. And then this is going to be used as like a deposit on a loan for several more million to fund this movie. And you know what? It did not go great.
What happened, Will? I mean, ponying up $1 million so you can make a feature length film for your fans to honk at for what is, you know, undeniably the horniest character in your comic book series. Like,
Yeah, it is funny. It's like, all right, the sexy lady, that's the one we're making the movie about, coincidentally.
Yeah, huh. Funny how that works.
Yeah, and I should say the plot of this is like, you know, the UN soldiers are coming to cancel conservatives, you know, with their guns. And
that sounds like a Kevin Sorbo plot.
Yeah, well, maybe he can market the script elsewhere. So they raise like $1 million, which is, you know, crowdfunding wise, a good chunk of change for these guys. I mean, this is maybe like, you know, some of the largest crowdfunding sums I've seen someone pull.
Yeah,
in.
Man, so, I wish I could raise $1 million.
Yeah, let's get the posting through it movie going. And so basically he ends up at one of these financial firms that, you know, banks the unbankable. And so it's not explicit here, but it sort of seems like this is like a targeting, you know, canceled people kind of thing. So he gives them $1 million in escrow. But little does he know that the guy running this company is allegedly a big time fraudster who is also making cryptocurrency mining rigs that don't really work. And he's like, why don't you buy one of these? No, they stay at my house. And the crypto's not ready yet. You know, all this kind of stuff. And then he's like cutting shady deals for PPE. This is kind of at the height of COVID.
Oh, yeah.
And so this company sends him $5 million, you know, according to the prosecutors, it sends him $5 million. And they say, okay, buy us some PPE from China. And then instead he blows it on his own legal expenses in some other unrelated way. And then this company's like, hey, where's our PPE? Well, Vox Day's company then hands him $1 million for this escrow for the movie. And then, you know, according to the indictment, he then goes, okay, great. And so he's sort of, you know, he's kind of running a shell scheme here.
Yeah.
And so then he spends it on the PPE. And then, you know, I think Vox Day say like, hey, where's my movie money? And then at that point, the blogger and his buddies, they contact a lawyer. And then that guy talks to the FBI. And now it's hard to know with these guys who's credible. But supposedly Vox Day then becomes sort of like involved in this effort to really nail this guy, and then ultimately, you know, there's been like a 3-year saga, but the guy got indicted last month. There's $1 million from I guess some of the worst people on the internet up in smoke.
Yeah, it's really disappointing that you know, this movie won't be made. But when I was on Fever Dreams last with you and Kelly, you know, you asked me what was interesting to me right now in the right-wing ecosystem, and I brought up all this production of movies and whatnot, and you know, not all of them are as explicitly racist, I guess, as Rebels Run or whatever the hell it was called. What was it?
Yes.
Rebels?
Yeah, it's Rebels Run.
Rebels
yeah.
Run. You know, the Daily Wire announced a year or two ago that they were going to have this like movie production house. There was whatever that Breitbart thing was about the Hunter Biden movie. Now,
yes, my son Hunter.
This technically doesn't count as a movie, but like Fox News is hosting a mock trial for Hunter Biden now on TV, which is
terrible. Have you watched it?
I haven't been able to bring myself to do it.
It is honestly, it is the worst of any of them, because it is, you got Judge Joe Brown, who was suspended from practicing law like 6 years ago, and he's just like, he's barely there. And they've got these just like D-tier TV lawyers who are just arguing back and forth. I mean, and the lighting alone is just really horrendous. I mean, it is brutal. But, you know, they get a lot of opportunities to show Hunter Biden self-made porn. So I think it accomplished what they were after.
I mean, would I be wrong to think that, you know, the entertainment value propositions from the right are like increasing in quantity lately? Are you getting that sense, or am I just memory holing a bunch of stuff?
No, there definitely is. I mean, if you think about the Daily Wire, for example, I mean, they have a whole like streaming site, and they like purchase some movies with sort of a conservative valence, and they've produced some. I think Gina Carano's canceling has provided an opportunity for some like semi-star power. She was obviously in My Son Hunter, and as well as this Western by Ben Shapiro. So, you know, I think they are. Like, I was just looking at a trailer for this guy who's in the Dukes of Hazzard, who was, I guess, is a right-wing guy now. And like, man, this one is, it's like set in a neighborhood, and it's all green screened. Like, I mean, it looks just like $20 was used to make it. And as far as I can tell, it's about a guy who like gets told he can't fly his flag around a high school, which, like, you know, it's great when there's like a guy with a restraining order,
yeah,
involving a high school who's your star. And basically he seems to do like a suicide by cop, because he like just insists on flying the flag. I mean, it looks really grim. And so, you know, look, this one is really not up there, even with like My Son Hunter, in terms of quality.
But the story seems undeniable, I have to say.
It's so powerful. So powerful. I mean, The green screen is so bad. Like, it's just a guy in his driveway. Like, I think you could get this set. And in the back, you can see, like the fuzz from the computer generation.
The there. Credits roll and the audience is in tears. Can you believe, this man died just so he could be close to high school students?
He claims it's a true story, but I've been Googling around and I found like no example of it.
Oh, those court records are still sealed, probably.
Too powerful.
Anyway, Will, let's keep it moving with the time we have left. Midterms are coming up.
Yes.
It's in like 3 weeks. It is the bane of my existence. I can't wait for election day to come and go, and then for the 2 months after, in which I'm sure the elections will be challenged unless Republicans win, of course. So, you know, I'm thinking by like mid-January, February, we should be in the clear just long enough, you know, before Trump announces that it's, you know, 2024 time. What have you been seeing in the run-up to midterms? And, you know, we only have so much time. So I guess of the things you're seeing, what have been the most concerning to you? Like, what have stood out as kind of the most potent things?
Yeah, well, you know, one thing I think is just striking is how much Fox has just become an infomercial for these struggling Senate candidates.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe like no more is struggling no more, seemingly. But like they just had these guys on just constantly just begging for money and just saying like, you know, you guys got to donate to these guys just constantly in a way that just does not exist for Democrats in any way. I mean, MSNBC is not having John Fetterman on for an hour, you know, just to stump for cash. So, I mean, it is really remarkable how much, and then on the reverse side, how much Fox has turned into, you know, any kind of shred of criticism against a Democratic Senate candidate is getting all this airtime. So, I mean, really, I think Fox has played like a huge role in reviving a lot of these Republican Senate campaigns.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I saw, I think it was Philip Bump at the Washington Post tried to like quantify candidates on Sean Hannity's radio program. And it was ridiculous. It's like the whole thing right now is just like a revolving door of candidates and then ads for, you know, speaking of right-wing alternatives, things like the Patriot phone, like screw it. AT&T yes. is too woke, so use Patriot phone, which uses AT&T cell towers, but we don't have to talk about that. So like there's the media angle, and then there's also sort of what has been happening in the last couple years in election conspiracy land. Do you expect that to really roar out to life? Like my general impression is from watching this for the last couple of years is that there's been a whole lot going on and a lot of us, at least in the research space, have sort of been hemming and hawing. You know, we're trying not to be too alarmist, right? To say, you know, well, we don't totally know what the impacts of this are going to be just yet, but I feel like we're going to find out real fast here in the next few weeks.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's almost inevitable that there's going to be some crazy, just terrible incident, and probably a lot more than one. You know, you think about, you know, these are people, people have to remember, I mean, if you're like a hardcore Republican voter, you are convinced the election was stolen in 2020. You're told it every day in the media. You
Which is a huge thing.
By your favorite.
If you think a coup happened in the country you live, that's, like, I don't think a lot of people appreciate how tremendous that like suggestion is. That is a huge thing to assume.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I think often people, you know, liberals, I think can tell themselves like, well, people don't really believe this or they're doing this as a troll or whatever. And then, you know, we saw what that led to in the past is like suddenly January 6th happens and stuff. I mean, people are convinced of this and, you know, it only takes one or two people to, you know, especially in a country with so many guns, for something to happen. I mean, we're already seeing there's such a culture, particularly after 2000 Mules. I think there's such a culture of like amateur detective work and amateur vigilantism and this kind of this trend that hasn't like exploded yet. But this idea of like camp outside the mail, the ballot box where people drop their ballots. Maybe you can catch a mule. By the way, like let's heavily code this idea that like, you know, minorities are mules. And, you know, maybe if you see someone shady, they're probably muling. So we've already seen one instance out of Arizona where, you know, according to this complaint, someone was, you know, basically harassed by people camped out outside a box. I mean, I think it's just really hard to imagine that, like, you have so many people, I would say millions of people, really hopped up on this idea that, like, you know, there's not going to be just some, like, a shooting or some, like, really vile, like, voter intimidation.
Yeah, that there's, like, there exists around the world, like, men in like black ski masks that tiptoe over to the ballot box at night and like dump a cartoonish Santa Claus bag of ballots into it. I think, you know, as the years go by, if things continue to decline and worsen in this country and the political landscape, I do think that 2,000 mules will be eventually appreciated as the incredibly potent propaganda film that it is. Like, it's hard for me. I think the only other one that I can remember that was able to hit that community and influence people into action so aggressively was that COVID-19 one, Plandemic. That one also like hit really hard. I kind of see it on the same level. And I don't know if maybe it's just looking at my own little circles or whatever, but I don't know that that film's impact has been truly appreciated yet, because like the people that, you know, had that complaint filed against them were part of an effort led by a woman who was like, oh yeah, we're going to watch all these drop boxes in 18 different states. Oh, and I was inspired by the Dinesh D'Souza movie.
Oh, exactly. I mean, 2,000 Mules, it makes no sense. And you mentioned Philip Bump, who has sort of like, you know, misspent his life, you know, fighting 2,000 mules. But I mean,
he owns the stable.
Yes. Top mule, Philip Bump. I mean, he's done a great job, but I mean, you can read his articles. The thing, it doesn't make any sense. But nevertheless, it has kind of the veneer like Plandemic. It's sort of like, it's enough that if you're motivated to believe this already, that you watch it and you're kind of like, all right, good enough for me. You know, I mean, you don't really have to like interrogate it. I mean, you know, he has these videos in 2,000 Mules, Dinesh D'Souza does, of like, it almost looks like the mule is being tracked by GPS through the city. And it's just like stock footage. I mean, it has no real like truth to it. But it's enough for people to be like, well, you know, I can just, if someone asks me why I believe the election was stolen, I'll just say 2,000 mules, like check out the mules. And, you know, we're talking about rank and file voters camping out in parking lots, but it's also been a big hit with Republican officials. You know, I believe there are examples out of Texas of these officials who are just like screening 2,000 mules and everyone's becoming mule pilled. And, you know, this idea that like the voter fraud was real and, you know, we can catch it because there are these guys we're out there. And in that way, I think it's like goes further to activate people than something like the Mike Lindell, like the packet captures, this idea that like, you know, someone in China was just like changing an Excel sheet.
Yeah, that stuff's too dense for people. Like for the general public, talking about like cast vote records or whatever. I've seen some of the like packets that have gotten delivered when people request that stuff. It's indecipherable to the average person. Like I know like an elementary school amount of code, so I sort of could understand sort of what was going on there. But even then, it was like, if you have like medium to low tech skills, there's no way you're making sense out of this.
Yeah, I mean, versus think about the mules, where it's like, okay, that ballot box that you see every day at the post office, if you see a guy put more than two envelopes in there, that's a mule. You know, and so that's a very, I think, easy thing for people to visualize. And it really seems to fire them up. And also, the other thing we should say is that, like, it also really plays into Republican goals for election loss, because suddenly it's like, OK, well, we have to get rid of mail-in ballots, except for troops and old people, our Republican constituencies. We have to. Yes. I love that emoji, man.
We respect our elders and our troops. Thank you.
It basically is like the only thing we can trust is like it has to be election day voting and it has to be counted that day, which obviously favors Republicans. So 2,000 Mules, I think, works in a whole lot of ways.
So I wanted to leave some time in this the same way that you left some time when I appeared on Fever Dreams recently to ask you sort of the same question. Is there a trend happening in right-wing spaces that it's just totally underappreciated, but you're just like fascinated with right now?
Yeah, you know what? Let me just pull up my my list of ideas real quick here. I've got kind of my like running like what's the deal with this kind of thing. All right, here we go. Yeah, you know what? I'm just gonna riff on this bad boy. All right, so
let it go.
Yeah, so there may be an article coming on this, but basically the manosphere has been, which is all these right-wing men, right, has been rent in half, and it's a little unclear, but basically this guy named Ivan Throne.
Oh my god, I haven't heard that name in forever.
AKA the Dark Triad Man, he did something at the Manosphere convention last week in Florida that like has really angered people, and it seems like he called for like violence or like the Macho Men to rise up against the government. Everyone's like, they won't admit what it is, but the quote president of the Manosphere put out a press release disavowing Ivan and saying he's gone mad. And so, you know, I'm trying to get to the bottom here, but basically whenever you're talking about a guy named Ivan Throne, you know, that's the sweet spot for me. I mean, this is a guy who with the goatee, the whole thing. I mean, this is where pickup culture, you know, from the like 2005 has led us.
Yeah. Yeah. The just humongous, like triangle shaped man who is like, pay $1,000 to smoke a cigar with me and I'll tell you how to be a man. And I'll just say,
he says, I'll recruit you for the cadre.
I'll just say things to you like being a man is about power, not love, and shit like that, you know, and I'll take your money for that. So it's, you know, no tears lost on this side of the mic. over this infighting,
you know, like I hate to leave folks with like half the story, but I feel like there's a lot more here. But this is sort of what is fascinating me right now.
So, Will, this podcast has a different name since the last time you were on it, mm-hmm. but it still has the same last question. You've had some bangers in the past, so I'm excited to hear your answer this time. What's your favorite thing on the internet right now?
I'm going to do two briefly. I mean, one, you know, we mentioned the saluting guy emoji. I love that guy. It's like, it's the perfect response to anything. You know, you could just like, it's either like, yeah, I got it. You know, you can do it kind of sarcastically. But the bigger thing is it's a streaming TV show. It's on Netflix. It's The Mole, folks. They rebooted The Mole. And, you know, I can't stress it enough. You know, Jared, you're a little younger than me. The Mole as a young man really hit me when I was in middle school. And now it's back. But the thing about The Mole is this time everyone wants to be thought of as The Mole. And so even if they're not The Mole. And so they screw up constantly in these very deliberate ways. They just look like buffoons. And so someone will say like, all right, I need you to like carry this on a boat. And then they'll just chuck it in the water and they'll say like, whoops, like Butterfingers, you know? And so, I mean, it's really this kind of like deliberate, you know, buffoonery is really hitting for me.
Well, Will, thanks for coming on the show this week. It's always a pleasure to have you. You've got a book coming out here in a bit, right? What's up with
that?
Yeah,
thank you.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's called Trust the Plan. It's my book on QAnon and its discontents. It's coming in February 2023 from HarperCollins. Obviously, there have been some great QAnon books in the past, but this one, you know, I'm really, I headed out into America to discover all of the awful ways QAnon has wrought. And really how it's become, you know, sort of mainstreamed within the Republican Party. I mean, we're talking about voter fraud, all these conspiracy theories that I think QAnon really helped bring about. And so, it's February 2023, and it's available for pre-order on Amazon or wherever else you get your books.
And you also are the co-host of the Daily Beast podcast, Fever Dreams. Tell us about that.
Yes, it's a podcast. You know, we get into the right-wing media, into the big things going on with conspiracy theories and just like grim internet stuff. You were just a guest recently, so people can check out your episode if they want to dip in. And you know, as folks I think know here on Posting Through It, I mean, there's no shortage of truly bizarre, and you know, sometimes you gotta laugh to keep from crying, you know. Yeah. And that's what we're trying to help with.
It's all one big cope. And on that on that note, Will Summer, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me. I just got some paid time off. Situation on airplane mode. Please do not disturb.